One, two, and one.
FM. It is the big picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 617-627-3800 is the telephone number. 617-627-3800. Or if you don't feel like picking up the phone, if you don't like calling and talking to people, if you communicate exclusively through the internet, there's a whole new way to reach the show.
More us.
More us. More ways to interact with the show.
And it's great. Then, you know, our audience members can say their disdain for Derek.
That's right. Yeah. So you can go to facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. Go over there. Like it. You can comment. You can say mean things about me. You can't say mean things about Lisa.
No.
No one can say mean things about Lisa. Yeah. That's just not allowed.
And we will have our Facebook page loaded, so when you comment, if you know, it's proper to say on air, we can say it.
Yeah, come on over, like it, leave comments, and if you want to be a part of the show and you don't have a phone or you're using your phone to tweet, this is a way to do it.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like to talk, and they're more texters, and
So it's facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. That's all one word. And it's that because someone already had the big picture.
Stole it from
us. It's those bums over at the Globe have it. And they don't use it. Yeah, it's like, oh, it's our photo blog that we never update. It's like, if you're not going to use it.
It was last updated about a year ago.
Yeah, if you're not going to use it, take it offline. No, they posted something about The Force Awakens. Just to remind everyone that they're there.
So are you okay with that?
And a friend of mine from high school likes the page. So, not ours, the Globe.
Yeah, well, like ours.
Yeah.
Everybody should like
ours. You're an admin on the page, by the way.
I know.
Not that you've done anything with the awesome power that you now wield in social media, but you are an admin on the page.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get all the notifications.
Yeah, okay.
Looks good. Just, I'm impressed.
Yeah, you can post things.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah. She said, looking at me with... You're going to be posting everything in her eyes.
No, he's going to hate everything that I post.
No, you're the No, I'm not going to hate anything that you post. Mm. What, you're a part of the show.
I know your internal voice, and you look at it and think, oh, why did Lisa post that?
No. No, the whole point of giving you admin access was so that you could post things and I could ignore it.
There you go.
So, anyway, facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. We're going to say that a million more times tonight and in every show after this from now on. There's some cool things going on over there. You can get the highlights of last week's show. Nice little 15-minute chunk in case you missed anything. We've also got a new feature over there called Two News and a Why, which are three stories that are posted every day. Two of them are relevant. One of them is for fun. You get to figure out which is which. And this is... Yeah.
It's the rain.
It's the rain. The rain is gumming up everything tonight. Can I mention that the Cadbury eggs and Reese's peanut butter eggs are now available at retail?
For Easter?
For Easter.
Come on.
We haven't even gotten through Valentine's Day yet.
Are those candies already on sale?
They should be. I haven't seen any Valentine's Day candy.
Those are stale because they were on the shelves on, December 26th?
Yeah, just Easter candy. Maybe all the Valentine candy sold out already. And all you can get is So
I'm a little more partial to the Easter candy. It's more of the sweet tart sort of thing going on, whereas Valentine's, chocolate.
So my wife is getting Cadbury eggs for Valentine's Day,
I guess. I'm sure she'll appreciate that.
Because I didn't get any candy yet. I like to buy it fresh. I'm crazy. And later tonight, we're going to be talking about the mall and which mall you should go to for your Valentine's Day shopping this weekend and which mall you should absolutely avoid. So, with that in mind, what did we learn this week, Lisa?
Well, today in local news, we learned Boston likes to keep it in the family. More than 100 new hires at the MBTA over the past 2 years have relatives working at the beleaguered transit agency, and nearly 15% had family on various state payrolls, according to newly released data. The latest family disclosure forms for new employees hired since 2014 show that 1 in 10 have family members on the T roster. An even greater portion of the MBTA new hires, nearly 15%, were related to those on state payrolls, including the T, this according to a mandated family disclosure data that on from January 1st, 2014 to December 18th, 2015. MBTA spokesperson Joe Pistoro said new applicants with relatives working in the T or within state government aren't given preferential treatment.
Oh, no, just a coincidence.
Nope. That hiring process is all legit.
After an exhaustive nationwide search, it turned out that Eddie's cousin was the most qualified person for the job.
Now, the T on Tuesday released the family disclosure records. This was 1,066. This was roughly for the two-year period through data spreadsheets, and this some of it was through the applicants' applications. Now, last year, the MBTA demanded $2,389 for the documents. So if you wanted Derek to see them, you had to pay $2,389. You know, you have state president Stanley Rosenberg and Charlie Baker coming in and saying, no way.
Can you do that?
You can't do that.
Can you do that thing like on the commuter rail where you go in and you say you're going to pay and then a bunch of other people show up? And they never get around to you to charge you, so you can ride for like months on a $10 Charlie card pass.
What's really interesting, though, we're talking about 1 in 10 employees. So over 1,000 people were hired in 2 years. Isn't that a significant number, considering we know the amount of money that the MBTA is in debt?
Well, but I mean, last week we were talking about the overtime problem and the fact that people were calling in sick. They didn't have enough people to get jobs done.
But the numbers don't make sense. So if we're talking about people that are making up the time for people calling out, so that is why they're making upwards of $200,000 in overtime, where are these new hires coming in?
In theory, you won't be paying out that overtime. So instead of paying $200,000 in overtime...
But every year we're seeing overtime rates rise.
Right, because they don't have enough people. So if you hire two people at $80,000 a year, you net $40,000 versus the overtime you've been spending.
But in 2 years, they hired over 1,000 people.
There's a lot of attrition. I don't know what's going on.
But the bigger question is, you come out and say it, and you want to be so transparent. That's why you're able to release all these records. This has been known. If you have somebody in your family that works for the MBTA, you're going to get a job. I mean...
Well, it's been that way for decades. This is new? Are you just catching on to this?
No, but this is proven.
I mean, yeah, this is the way it's always been. Everybody on Beacon Hill has got somebody working for the MBTA.
I mean, this is a corrupt organization to the core. Just because it's happening doesn't make it's okay.
It's not necessarily the MBTA itself that's corrupt. It's not even the unions. It's everybody who has the ability to influence what happens over there. It's Beacon Hill that's corrupt, that stuffs the MBTA with all these patronage hires. And then people get into the MBTA and they start bringing their family on board. Because let's face it, $80,000 a year to drive a train or
to
make change at Park Street Station.
A nice little kickback when they're bringing on references. Now, the New York City Transit Authority, one of the things that they do, they use written exams to actually hire conductors, drivers, even, you know, ticket agents. Why in Massachusetts are we not doing the same thing? Nope. Derek, we're related. Come on.
Sure.
Come on board.
Sure.
I get a nice little stipend.
One of us needs to get a job at the T. My company does that. Yeah. If you refer somebody, you get a bonus.
No, most companies do that.
Yeah. So why shouldn't the T be able to do that? Oh, because that's taxpayer money. Yeah, well, it's hard to find qualified people, Lisa. Yeah. That's the challenge at the NBTA. It's ridiculously hard for them to find qualified people. Exhaustive nationwide searches. In national news, we learned that millions in spending will get you a coin flip. With Iowa caucuses split nearly evenly between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, several counties used coin flips to determine who would get available delegates from those counties. The coin flips did not determine the outcome of the caucuses, which saw Hillary Clinton win with 49.9% of the vote, compared with 49.6% for Sanders. On the Republican side, Ted Cruz leveraged evangelicals to get a win with 27.6% of the vote. Donald Trump finished in second place with 24.3%, and Marco Rubio had a stronger-than-expected third-place finish with 23.1%.
What's so interesting is that the media almost seems so incredibly out of the loop with regards to the Iowa caucuses. The media narrative going into this week was GOP candidates, it's going to be a close one. It's going to go back and forth either between Cruz or Trump. Then you look on the Democratic candidates, you have Sanders, who they thought was going to be pummeled by Hillary. Come to find out, complete opposite. You have Cruz running away with it, Trump in a decent second, Rubio in third. Whereas on the Democratic side, I mean, what are we talking about? 0.3%?
Yeah.
0.3%?
Yeah. So
that's incredible.
Within the margin of error for the
polling. Whole entire day, they actually didn't call it until the next day.
No, because they didn't have all the results in. That's how close. I mean, 0.3%. And this is bad news for the Clinton campaign because they have had 8 years to figure this out. They have had 8 years to build up their ground game, to figure out their marketing plan, to figure out how to say what to which voters to get them out to the polls. Bernie Sanders has been in this for less than a year, and he took half of the vote.
And it just proves again why I believe that she is one of the worst candidates you have ever seen. Not just based on my personal opinion, but exactly like you just said. If we look at her numbers, we look at her background, we look at her experience, she has everything to back her.
If Martin O'Malley...
And you have Sanders just coming in, and it's that close? Come on.
If Martin O'Malley isn't in the race, Bernie might win the... Bernie might have won that thing.
But he got 0%.
He still walked away with 7 delegates. And that 7 delegates was pretty much either would have been a dead tie between the two of them, or it would have pushed Bernie over the top by like 1 delegate. But here's to me what's much more telling about this. This is Hillary Clinton speaking to her supporters after announcing her win, even before the win was certified.
An unbelievable night. What a great campaign. This has been an incredible honor to campaign across Iowa with so many of you to make the case for the kind of future we want for the Democratic Party and for the United States of America.
Cringing.
There is
So you heard that. That's her first that applause voice. Break in her speech. Here's what Bernie walked out to. It goes on that for another 30
sensing
seconds.
Sensing a little bit more excitement from...
Do you think there might be a slight enthusiasm gap between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton?
But that speaks volumes. And seeing how close Sanders came to her with below 1%, I think this is going to be the push. I mean, there doesn't even need to be a push going into... New Hampshire. And this whole, you know, rhetoric that we're hearing from the Clinton camp saying, well, it's, you know, neighbors vote neighbors. I believe being neighborly. Come on.
I mean, I think on one hand, you can look at the Bernie Sanders supporters and say they were surprised to do as well as they did. And that got them fired up. But Hillary still was the presumptive winner of that thing. And her supporters are basically sitting there going, yay. Yay, Hillary. Well, okay, we get Hillary. I was like, where's the excitement? Where's the passion?
I'm telling you, it is a slow fall. And you are going to see the gap widening and having Sanders moving up. May I just say, Ted Cruz, take a bow.
Yeah.
This past couple weeks, he had been, you know, thrown and taking fire from every single side, most coming from Trump, verifying his citizenship or even eligibility to be running.
Yeah, here's
and look at the numbers that he ran away with. You even had the governor of Iowa saying,
Don't vote for Ted Cruz.
Yep. So, yeah, you look really, really stupid, Governor Branstad.
Here's what Ted Cruz had to say at the end of his speech the other night.
We are going to do this together as a movement from the people. And I tell you tonight, Iowa has made clear to America and the world, morning is coming. Morning is coming. Thank you and God bless you.
I don't know what it is about the way he's morning is coming. I don't know what it is that I
hear. Are we talking morning, like the time of the day or morning?
But I mean, of course, Ted Cruz, I think that's spelled with a U, by the way. Mm. Of course, Ted Cruz is going to win this. It is a heavily evangelical state. And
but he was getting a lot of criticism talking to these small groups. I mean, he, if you actually watch that Showtime series, Circus, it gives you kind of a perspective on his campaign. He's not going to these big, elaborate, you know, campaign rallies that Trump's going to. He's going to these small churches that have maybe 30, 40, 50 people there. He's going to Second Amendment gun rallies in New Hampshire that maybe have 100 people there. So when he's getting criticism saying, is it pointless to go to these small venues? Clearly not. Everything was against him going into Iowa.
But the other thing about it is, his father is a pastor. And if you watched all of the speech on Tuesday night or Monday night, which mercifully most of you didn't because they shut it off partway through and went over to Hillary. I actually did watch the whole thing. And as I like to say, we're informed so you don't have to be. I don't recommend you go watch it. But he sounds like a preacher in this speech. And the thing that's going through my mind as I'm watching this is that angle may have resonated with the voters in Iowa. That angle is not going to resonate with the godless heathen up in New Hampshire who just want to know where you can get cheap opium. That's what New Hampshire is all about.
And when Ted Cruz first came out, that was one of his, you know, people were knocking him for and criticizing him, maybe being too polished, being very speech-like, pastor-esque.
Yeah.
Whereas I found down the line as you went with the debates, he softened up a little bit. You actually felt that he was talking from the heart and not having this script where he's almost falling back into that. And I hope he doesn't go there because he's a great candidate.
Well, if he keeps campaigning on this whole evangelical thing, he'll learn quick because he's not going to win New Hampshire on that.
Absolutely not. Marco Rubio,
by the way, big, big win for him. He came in third, almost beat Trump, lost out by like 2,300 votes or so. But that was a much stronger showing than anyone expected. And I think if Rubio can hone his message a little bit, he's got a good shot at being the guy.
Well, we're already seeing people being dropping off. So we have
Santorum. Rick Santorum is gone. Mike Huckabee is gone.
Rand Paul
is gone. And Martin O'Malley is gone.
So now contrary
to rumors spread by the Cruz campaign, Ben Carson has not left the building.
Mm-hmm. That was, yeah.
That was what Donald...
Having all of his...
That's what Donald Trump was upset about this morning when he said Ted Cruz stole the race because the Cruz people sent out an email to their supporters saying, Ben Carson's going to drop out this week. Please vote for Ted Cruz.
I'm actually on his email list, and I've never received an email that said that, so...
Well, it's because you weren't in Iowa. It was directed specifically at the Iowa people. So if you were caucusing here...
Yeah, we're email buddies.
You might have heard something about that. Yeah, I wouldn't email Ted Cruz. I don't think anything good comes of that. In world news, we learned that there's a fun way to get Zika, because we need that. The Centers for Disease Control confirmed a case of sexual transmission of the tropical virus, which has been linked to microcephaly in newborns. Dallas Health and Human Services reported that a patient had caught the virus after close contact, including sexual contact, with a patient who was exposed during a trip to Venezuela. The World Health Organization called the news a cause for concern and said it will begin to investigate methods of transmission other than the Aedes aegyptis mosquito. So
if I want the D, I might get the Zika virus.
You get the Z along with the D.
Yeah,
now.
Not good.
Apparently. And this could be a rare thing. This could be a common thing. I really hope this is a rare thing, because here in the United States, when it comes to keeping sexually transmitted diseases under control, our record is lacking. Because we have a lot of people walking around who say, that doesn't affect me. That's somebody else's problem. I'm invulnerable. I forgot the condom. It'll just be this one time. Whatever excuse is given, we have not done well at controlling sexually transmitted diseases.
Yeah, just because you say you don't have it doesn't mean you don't have it.
Yeah.
Now, what's... They came up when this was first coming out and saying this isn't contagious. The only way that you can actually be infected is if you're bitten by a mosquito or something carrying it. Now we're finding out, well, if you have sex with somebody that's infected, this could make it grow massively. I mean, at the rate that it is already growing is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, you have the World Health Organization coming out, what was it, on Monday or yesterday, calling it, this is a world epidemic.
Yeah, that was yesterday. It said it's a global health problem.
Mm-hmm.
They're not calling it a crisis yet, but we'll be at crisis before long on this. There are a couple of unique problems with these mosquitoes. One is that they can breed in like a thimble of water. They don't need, a lot of mosquitoes need or want ponds, and they want a lot of standing water. This mosquito doesn't care. The other problem with this mosquito is they don't live in water. So usually they can go out and fumigate and kill the mosquitoes in the trees and the water and all the rest of that, and they're all set. This particular mosquito likes to live in closets, likes to live in your house. Nice. So it gets in and it hides somewhere, and then it comes out and bites you.
Now, these mosquitoes are not in the United States. These are people that are traveling outside of the United States, becoming infected, and coming back.
Aedes aegyptis is native to southern parts of the United States. Well, there was a new alert that came out at the end of the day today where they basically said, we have a problem, because if somebody comes back to the United States who's infected, gets bitten by a mosquito, that mosquito could then transmit it to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically throwing up their hands at this point and said, yes, we are going to have a Zika problem in the United States. They're still confining it to the southern United States. But now we have sexual transmission involved in this.
So we're almost going opposite, where you assume that a mosquito carrying it would infect the person. But now, from what I'm understanding, is the person can have it, become bitten by the mosquito. The mosquito now becomes infected. It is a carrier to transmit it.
And a lot of people don't show any symptoms of the disease, so they don't know they have it.
It does stay in your bloodstream for
10
what
days.
Is it? And I heard, like 7 to 10 days.
Yeah. So this is one to keep an eye on, because this is, for the vast majority of people who are not having children, who are past childbearing age, or who are nowhere near having children yet, you don't have to worry about this. Zika is not going to hurt you. For anyone who is of childbearing age, the birth defect that this causes is potentially devastating.
Oh, absolutely. You have to look at the scope and magnitude of this. You're having countries coming out and saying, delay having children for 2 years.
Yeah.
When did we ever have a time in the world where we said that?
This is something that has the
potential.
Could
you imagine that coming in the United States?
Unprecedented. Unprecedented. This is something that has the potential to rewrite the demographic profile of the planet. That's how serious this is. Because if this disease gets established in northern parts of the United States and it's transmitted through sexual contact, it's going to be everywhere. There was this hope that maybe it's this thing that's just contained to this little tropical belt and you get a few cases in the summertime and we can work our way around that. Doesn't seem to be true. So, hang in. Yeah. Think twice about procreating, having unprotected sex.
Yeah.
The two things that we really can't do anything about in this country, mosquito bites and sex. One way or another, you're getting one of those things
this
year.
One's good and one's bad.
Yeah. You're getting one of those. One of those two things will happen to you this year. You'll get a mosquito bite or you will have sex. If you somehow manage to avoid both of those things for a year, you are by yourself in a polar ice station.
Right.
You're in a polar ice station by yourself.
In your end of the world bunker.
Or you are a nun living in Seattle where there are no mosquitoes. Those are your only two options.
Well, in sports, we learned misconduct against not only players, but referees caused great consequences. The NHL suspended Calgary Flames defenseman Dennis Wiedemann 20 games Wednesday for cross-checking a linesman during a game last week. Wiedemann was suspended for violating the league rule on physical abuse of officials after he struck linesman Don Henderson and knocked him down during the Flames game against Nashville on January 27th. The 32-year-old will forfeit $564,000 in salary as a result of the suspension, which is the second longest in NHL history for abusing an official. Gordy Dwyer of the Tampa Bay Lightning was suspended for 23 games in part of an abuse of officials during the exhibition game in 2000. Now, did you actually see this?
Yes, I have seen this.
One of the angles on most of the videos that is going around, it's really hard to see it because it's just in the corner. And what you do see is Wiedemann going off into the bench. Moments before this happened, he actually got knocked down to his knees. So he's coming out and saying, you know, my brain was scattered. I wasn't really.
Well, his defense, if you read it correctly, is I had a concussion. That's his defense.
Mm-hmm.
I had a concussion. I just took a shot to the head. I didn't know where I was. I was in pain. I couldn't really see anything. I didn't know where to go. Those are concussion symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
If you have those symptoms in an NFL game, they make you sit down for a couple of plays.
No, and absolutely. And, you know, there's been a lot of criticisms. Why has he not, right after the moment that this had happened, why did he not come out to the ref and say, you know, I'm sorry? He's in a state of confusion. He not only just got knocked down, but then knocked into a referee.
Did he even go through the concussion protocol? Because I haven't seen any evidence that he did.
So
this is the first, I think, that anybody's heard about this concussion.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch the video, I mean, he pretty obviously shoves the guy. You know, he's right along the boards. The linesman is in front of him. He's clearly heading to his bench, sees a guy in front of him, and just stiff arms him with his right arm and knocks the guy right on his face. So there's nothing accidental about it. This is not incidental contact. Wiedemann definitely meant to hit somebody. I think the argument that he's making is, I didn't realize that was a linesman I was hitting
mm-hmm.
because I was concussed at the time, Your Honor.
No, I think that, in my opinion, 20 games is too much. If you come from a situation where you were just knocked down, understanding that it could be the possibility of a concussion, I get it. We do need to protect the linesmen and officials. But now the bigger question is, do we get to a point where this is happening not frequently, but they are getting injured? Are you going to have linesmen starting to wear some sort of padding, or at least on the chest? Or,
well, the guy was wearing a helmet. That didn't do him much good.
Because
he got his head banged on the boards.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think the suspension is more than fair. You cannot hit the officials under any circumstances.
Yeah, but
you cannot hit the officials. Ever. Because as soon as... Look at the last time we had a suspension this big.
Almost blackout?
The last time we had a suspension this severe was 15 years ago. Okay?
2000.
And you know what? If by some miracle we caught an innocent guy making a mistake and we're sitting him 20 games, that's unfortunate. But the broader message that you do not hit an official, under any circumstances, no matter how concussed or bleedy or angry or whatever you are.
Mm-hmm.
Has to be the rule.
I think there should be an investigation in it.
I think you just let that suspension stand. And again, if an innocent man is getting thrown out for 20 games and losing $500,000, that's unfortunate. But I would think even Dennis Weidman would recognize the need to protect the referees and the need to protect the officials.
Absolutely. And he's come out and said that in his statement.
Yeah.
But when you are in a state of not even realizing where you are or what you're doing, exactly like you just said, you're putting away an innocent man or losing $500,000.
I'm not going to call Dennis Weidman a liar because he's bigger than I am and could destroy me. But he seems to be skating along pretty well under his own power up to that moment where he checks the referee. So,
not a full-blown...
It's a pretty hard hit, and he hits the guy in the back. The guy isn't even aware that he's back there because he's watching the play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know if he's just trying to knock someone out of the way to get to the bench or whatever, but certain rules need to be sacred. And thou shalt not hit the zebras.
That I understand.
Thou shalt not hit the zebras is one of those rules that must be sacred.
But that is why exactly we never see something like this. So when you have an instance...
Because guys know you're going to get 20 games. Whether you are in control of your faculties or not, you could be having a full-on psychotic breakdown. You hit a zebra.
You somehow control yourself.
You hit a zebra, 20 games. I got no problem with it. I think it's the... And every sport needs to do this. We had that stuff that was going on back at the start of football season where we had those two clowns at the high school out in New Mexico.
Oh, that
decked a zebra.
That is far different.
Coaches got fired. But here's the thing.
You had kids attacking a ref.
Here's the thing. If you look at what Weidman did outside of the context that he has provided, it looks like that's what he did.
No way. You can't even compare the two.
I can absolutely compare the two.
You cannot.
He skates up to a guy who's not paying attention and decks him in the back.
Planning to do this because they didn't like the play call.
And how do we know that Weidman doesn't like this guy? How do we know that Weidman isn't upset about something the guy called? And he's like, you know what? Bang. Get out of my way. You don't touch the zebras.
You're making it seem like you punched him in the face.
He punched him in the back. That's pretty much what he did. He punched him in the back and knocked him face forward into the boards.
Yeah. I want to see you skating at that speed and then trying to stop
him. He's not skating at any speed. He's walking off the ice.
He was moving.
He wasn't moving, but he was moving at a walking pace. I've seen the video.
Walking?
It is a deliberate act.
Yeah.
It is a very deliberate act. And even if it's not a deliberate act, you don't touch the zebras.
Well, in food news, we learn the culinary world has lost a star. Chef Benoit Vollier, a Swiss restaurant, was crowned best restaurant in the world last month, had been found dead in apparent suicide, police said. His body was discovered late Sunday afternoon at his home in Chrysler, Western Switzerland, in a statement the Canton Police website said Monday. He was 44 years old, ran a 3-Michelin-star restaurant, de Hotel de Ville. In December, France's prestigious La Liste ranking crowned the establishment the world's best restaurant. That was actually beating out last year's Per Se, which bumped down to number 2. The initial investigation points to suicide by gunshot. His apparent suicide has shocked the restaurant and sown confusion on why he would kill himself just a month after being crowned best chef in the world. Now, what's so interesting about this is it's really not never discussed. And being in this industry, I understand the stressors of it, especially maybe, Derek, you as being a patron or just, you know, the general public don't understand the amount of stress that is in the industry. If you want any good perspective on this, you can go to Netflix, Chef's Table, or 3 Stars. Great mini docs on it. It puts you right on the line. Last week, we talked in depth about depression and how that affects the brain. And this is another example of it. We had a few years ago, one of the top chefs had killed himself in a suicide. This past year, a Chicago chef, a celebrity chef, Homara Cantu, was found hanging in his soon-to-be-open restaurant. this is serious. This is incredibly sad.
I don't know how these guys do what they do, because they work 7 days a week, and there's no let up. It is a high pressure job, and it doesn't surprise me that every now and again one of these guys just says that's enough and ends it all.
It's, you know, when you're at this level, they call it a haute cuisine. I mean, there's plenty of restaurants in Boston, very much similar. Barbaloo, you go in Cambridge, Uni, these big, big chefs, Ken Orangers, your Jamie Bissonettes, their lives depend on maybe just one review.
Yeah.
Or if you get knocked down one star on a Michelin, that could mean everything. And especially where we're in a society where reviews mean so much, people rely so heavily on something like Open Table reviews, Yelp, as much as I say, don't use it. It determines if you put food on your own table, if you succeed. That amount of pressure, we understand putting depression on a chef to the point.
And there's no escape from it, because tomorrow you got to go to work, and 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 every single day is exactly the same.
This is why you have a majority of these chefs, they don't have a spouse.
No.
They don't have children, because this is your baby.
And it's insane that the industry works that way. Because there really isn't, and that's sort of been the game if you want to be one of these top chefs.
And what the sad thing about it, though, is there's no way around it.
No.
We're not going to change the industry of reviewing or categorizing where you stand in compared to other restaurants in the world.
But the other thing that you run up against in that business is it's very low margin. So even, you know, you think about, oh, you go to this place, it costs like $300, you know, for two people to eat. Maybe they're taking home $20 or $30 off of that, like per customer. So you're making like $500 or $600 a night if you're lucky.
No, for the majority of these chefs, if you are at that level, you are a celebrity chef. So you're getting bumped up by shows like Top Chef.
Well, those are
and making appearances.
But notice what
so that brings it into Hollywood. For the average person, they may not know. Derek, you and I both are very in tune with the industry and in restaurants and bars scene. So we know about these names.
What do those guys do when they hit that level? What did Emeril Lagasse do? What did Gordon Ramsay do? What do they all do? They go on television.
Mm-hmm.
They're on television all the time.
You become commercialized. You start selling pans.
They don't run restaurants anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They still own restaurants.
Well, the stress is very low at that level because you are now...
They hire somebody else to come in and be the chef so they can go be on TV all day get some sleep.
I don't want to take anything away from any of them. Because if you look at somebody like an Anthony Bourdain and just hearing his stories about the pressure that he used to have to go to and where he started in New York.
These guys absolutely earn what they get. But the problem is only a handful of those guys are ever going to get there. Everybody else is stuck in the kitchen 7 nights a week. Or maybe you get Mondays off. So you're stuck in the kitchen 6 nights a week. That's brutal.
No, it's taxing. Absolutely. It's taxing on the body. It's taxing on the mind.
Yeah. It is a difficult, difficult job that does not get nearly as much respect as it should. It does in certain circles.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like you say, it's true. Everything hinges on the reviews for these guys. And everything hinges on reputation for these guys. And at a certain point, you can't take that pressure anymore. You burn out. And when you burn out, you do a couple of things. You either walk away or you put a gun to your head.
And that's what we're seeing. That's a sad reality.
Yeah. It's a damn shame. It really is a damn shame to lose talented young chefs like this. But as
best chef in the world.
As you say, this isn't isolated. This isn't new. This isn't different.
Mm-hmm.
This is just...
This happens.
What happens? Don't let your kid be a chef. In tech news, we learned that Google will try to manipulate jihadists into giving up the fight. Senior Google executive Dr. Anthony House told European regulators that the search engine will use its AdWords platform to provide anti-jihadist propaganda when users try to search on terms such as join ISIS. The program will be supported through grants to non-governmental organizations who will be able to craft messages that will appear alongside Google search results.
So we're not necessarily saying we're monitoring the internet, but there's new phrases that are going to bring up red flags.
Every bit of credit for good intentions. You know, someone types in join ISIS and you see a thing that says, don't join ISIS, get a puppy. You know, and it's like, you know what?
American's good.
Maybe a puppy would fulfill me more than strapping dynamite to my chest and blowing up a bus full of people. You never know. And you might get some wins out of this. The problem is what they're doing here. And this is Google basically saying, we can manipulate search results, which they have been accused of time and time and time again. It's nice that they're being very upfront about all of it, but it should still scare the living hell out of anyone that hears it.
But in their defense, what they're going to say is, well, we're manipulating them for a good cause.
Yeah, but that's not the point. Okay.
Oh, I'm not defending it, but that's what they would say.
The government
said... You have to look at corporate and what... You know, you have PR team running in. No. We're not saying that we're manipulating your search, Derek. We're talking about just jihads. Jihads are bad. Yeah. Derek, you're good.
Yeah. And it's also a proof of concept. And once you've proven you can do it there, you know, you run it.
But what it comes down to, though, is if you're searching and Google can now manipulate it, what if a company paid Google money so that they get bumped up to the top? Or if you type something in...
That already exists. It's called Google AdWords, and everyone in the industry knows how that works. That is separate. In a commercial environment, a company coming in and buying to be number one in Google, to have the number one ad in Google, that's one thing. Everybody understands that. Everybody knows how that works.
Yeah, but what if you type in something completely unrelated to a company and you get that?
This is political. This is psychological warfare. This is manipulation. Those are not good things. Those are not things that anyone should welcome from a near-monopolistic gatekeeper that controls pretty much all search in the United States of America, and a commanding share of search around the world. We don't want Google coming out and saying, oh yeah, we can manipulate the results. Because if you can do it to stop the jihadists, what else can you do it for?
Mm-hmm.
So I type in Bernie Sanders, and all of a sudden, here's all these, Hillary Clinton's the best. Hillary Clinton's great. Have you thought about Hillary Clinton? Why wouldn't you consider Hillary Clinton?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because I want to vote for Bernie Sanders. What about Hillary Clinton? Give Hillary Clinton another look. Hillary Clinton's the best. Everyone loves Hillary Clinton. And you're like, where are the Bernie Sanders results?
Well, and understanding how much big business works with some of these candidates, Hillary Clinton, that's a problem.
Google has maintained for a long time that they are unable, including in several court filings, with various European agencies, that they don't have any real control over the search results. That their algorithm decides it, that they don't manually adjust it one way or another. Now they're turning around and saying, oh yeah, no, we have control. And they're doing it in a very roundabout way. They're saying, we're going to use our advertising platform and we're going to give grants to non-governmental organizations. Again, all sounds great. But basically what you're saying is, we have a way to manipulate what you see in Google. And that's something that everybody, regardless of what your political affiliation is, regardless of what you believe in, what you think, everybody should be concerned about that. Google,
look at the power that Google has.
Google, at some level, should not have that level of power.
And everybody's constantly connected to it. Google now has the open page on all Androids. So you are constantly hooked up to it, whether you are away from your computer. How many people use their phone constantly every day? It is in your face. You are searching things. Those messages are going to inundate you. And as you said, that's scary.
Most people assume that the results they see at the top of Google are the results that they want, or that they're the only results available. Some of us spend our days going very, very deep into what Google puts out there. And if you do enough searches and you start looking for enough different things, you start to realize that, especially in news coverage, there is a tremendous bias in what gets up to the top. a tremendous bias. Mm-hmm. That anything that fits the mainstream narrative is always sitting there. And anything that's coming from an alternative perspective is gone.
How many times, you know, doing research for the show, you have to spend maybe on one story hours just going through article and articles just trying to find something that isn't biased.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what we try to do on this show. We don't want to give you that mainstream message that you're constantly getting every day.
No, because you can go get that anywhere. There's no reason for us to exist if we just feed you the same stuff.
You know, for the most part, type in something in Google that's going on, maybe Iowa caucuses. Good chance, top three, you're going to get a CNN, you're going to get a Huffington Post, and maybe a Daily Beast.
And CNN is so in the bag for Hillary, it's not even funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even funny. I was really tempted to rip apart their coverage of the Finicum shooting because the FBI released the video. And the way
very, very far away video.
The way that CNN covered that is appalling. And anybody who's interested in seeing media manipulation at work, I encourage you to read this article. Because what they did is they got someone who was actually in the car, an actual witness who was in the vehicle with Finicum, and sat her down and had her watch the video and kept saying to her over and over again, he went for the gun, right? He went for the gun, right? And they're queuing up the video to specific points. They're saying, see where he goes for the gun? And she's sitting there the whole time saying, that's not what happened. And if you watch the video, there's no evidence of that. Mm-hmm. You can't, you're talking about a video that was shot from
either a helicopter
or a drone, one of the two.
It's so far away, you can't see anything.
You don't even see the moment when he gets out of the car. I'm sitting there reading this and I'm like,
the car is small enough. The fact that you could possibly make out a person reaching for their gun is impossible.
Yeah, so I got somebody looking at a blurry video saying, oh, look, he went for a gun, versus someone who was actually in the car and watched it go down. And the way that CNN wrote this article,
what you're talking about, crazy.
The way that, well, that's what they said.
It's crazy.
Because their headline was, I saw what I saw. And we know what that means. It is...
oh, she's on his side.
Incredibly irresponsible reporting by CNN.
But you see this so much right now.
Because all CNN had to do was put out the video and say, there is nothing in the video that indicates he ever had a gun in his hand.
Media works for Washington.
That's all you had to say. Nope, he was going for the gun, and the FBI was justified, or the state police were justified in shooting him to death. Not what the video shows. And not what the witness says. But that's not good enough for CNN. They're going to ridicule the witness for not agreeing with their perspective.
Quote-unquote experts?
Not your job, CNN. Shameful. And it's still up there. Go look for CNN's coverage of the Finicum video, and you'll see it. I'd suggest you spend your time reading something more worthwhile, but it's out there if you want it.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky, stormy weather.
Well, you got that one right tonight, Lena. There is no sun up in the sky, there's rain. And you know what? We're going to get more rain, and it's going to be heavy. But it's also going to be in the upper 50s tonight.
And it's not snow.
Open a window. You know, it's turn on the air conditioner. It's a little nice out, apart from the raindrops. Tomorrow, more of the same. We're going to start out the day with some morning showers. Temperatures in the middle 50s. But then tomorrow night, it's going to start getting cold. So go out and enjoy yourself during the day, because we fall back into the mid 30s on Thursday night. Friday, that's about as high as we're going to get. It's back in the mid-30s, into the 20s on Friday night. Possibility of 1 to 3 inches of wet, soggy, slushy snow in southeastern New England. Keep an eye on the map to see where that is. Saturday, we get to the mid-40s, below freezing Saturday night. Sunday, same thing, mid-40s for a high, upper 20s on Sunday. Mostly sunny skies.
I like sunny, and I like the 50s.
Yeah. I don't know where the rain snow
line
is.
How nice was it on Monday?
Monday was pretty nice.
The weekend
was pretty nice. You know, he couldn't really argue with
crazy.
The weather.
February 1st.
Yeah, this isn't going to be like a huge blockbuster storm that we got coming in or anything like that. And it's Mostly, I think, going to be Cape and the Islands. But keep your eyes out. You might have to bust out the snowblower. When we come back here on WMFO Medford, it will be Stump the co-host. We're going to take a quick break and be back with that right here on WMFO.
This is Sarah Beck for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Slow cooking, whether on your stovetop or in a slow cooker, can make the economical cuts of meat taste delicious. Less tender cuts like bottom round and brisket taste best if cooked in moist heat, so they're ideal for slow cooking. Since these cuts usually give you the most meat for your money, you can have economy and good taste. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, 20250.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 617-627-3800 is the telephone number. Or you can find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. And I noticed Kim has not posted anything. So I assume she's just...
I think she might be working.
Is she working or is she sending her snarky comments to you?
Because, no, I haven't gotten anything yet. I've had radio silence.
All right. So... we got this music because you didn't bring in any music.
I gave you ideas.
Vaguely read some stuff at me at a bar last week. You were like, we're outside, you're waving a phone around, you're like, I got this and I got this.
You're making me sound like I'm a drunk. I had one glass of wine.
No, you had one glass of wine, but it was late, we're tired, I think there was snow flowing around. I don't know what was going on, but it's like,
snow.
Because you can't email, I give you admin on the site, you do nothing.
Every day, it's just a...
Email me.
You have to remember that Derek lost Stump the Co-host last week, so he is still bruised inside about that.
I'm bruised that you don't, like, email me the song. What songs did you even... I couldn't even remember any of them this
week.
I gotta
look them back up.
So you don't remember either. What happened to the thing that you were waving around on your cell phone last week?
Yeah, I have it.
Okay.
I have it. So, I'm gonna pull it up.
Well, don't break a sweat on account of the show. I wouldn't want you to do that.
Well, it's time for Stump the Co-host.
Yeah, the segment with no music. Yeah. Because Lisa just can't really bother to, you know...
I'm the worst.
Lift a finger to help the show. Mm. For the listeners, I care. You see, I put a lot of effort into all of these things. And then Lisa just kind of sits there and she's like, yeah.
Yeah. So exactly what I do every single week. I come completely unprepared.
No, you're prepared. It's just there's no extra. Mm-hmm. You know, you're apparently we're all supposed to be thrilled that you show up prepared. That, like, that's it, and there will never be.
You know, I don't need to take this, Derek.
I am being harsh.
Yeah,
I'm being harsher than I should.
But I'm used to it. Very typical of you.
No, no. I mean, I'm not. You know, no. I'm picking on you for the sake of picking on you, and there's nothing. There's nothing serious behind that. But at the same, you could have emailed me the song titles instead of just waving them at me outside of a bar.
Yep. Oh.
Right?
There we go. There goes the phone, Kim.
Yeah, so you know.
Kim, post to the Facebook page.
Yeah, has she?
Let Derek know how you feel.
Has she found her way over to the Facebook page yet? Facebook.com/BigPictureWMFO. I love you. Mm. You know I love you. I love you so much, I'll let you go first.
Okay, here we go. Stroop waffle.
Stroop waffle. Oh, God.
Stroop waffle.
Stroop waffle. I was just reading about this the other day. Oh, God.
You can now enjoy your Stroop Waffles, a breakfast that will be provided by United Airlines because they are bringing back free snacks. That is including crackers and mini pretzels. You see that peanuts are off the list. Actually, American on Monday. So United actually rolled out with this on Monday. United announced on Monday that they will be restoring complimentary snacks and in-house entertainment for free. So now you won't starve.
So you can get your Stroop Waffle.
Stroop Waffles.
For
breakfast.
A mile high.
Yum. All right. What do you get?
Gobbler's Knob.
Gobbler's Knob. Oh, that is where, that's in Punxsutawney, in Pennsylvania, where the groundhog. He said there is early spring. Saw his shadow.
Yes. He saw his shadow. Well, he saw his shadow in Georgia.
But Gobbler's Knob is in Pennsylvania.
Excuse me. He didn't see his shadow in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. In other parts of the country, he did see his shadow. General Beauregard Lee saw his shadow. The worst one was the one up in Canada where the groundhog died like 2 days before Groundhog Day. And then they just canceled it. They were like, yeah, the groundhog, like, it was fine in the morning, and then they went back to see it in the afternoon, and it was dead.
See, I know that from Groundhog Day movie. Yep. Watched it yesterday.
So you didn't know it from the actual news. You knew
of course.
I just wanted an excuse to say Gobbler's Knob.
CVS.
CVS is merging with Target and taking over the pharmacy operations in, I think it's 157 Target locations nationwide. So Target is basically getting out of the pharmacy business so that they can focus on everything else that they do. And they cited the fact that they have been losing money trying to keep up with the regulations and licensing and everything that goes on with this. CVS gains a bunch of new locations for this and will be operating their Minute Clinics in some of these Target stores where Target already had some level of service.
Perfect. And actually, CVS is paying $20 to $25 million annually for rent in these spaces. Very interesting.
It is a very interesting sort of little collision of two brands.
Mm-hmm. Very smart.
Yes. I think ultimately it is.
I mean, the fact that you're going to have foot traffic from both of these now merged into one.
This is WMFO Medford. I have to say that.
All right.
I also have to say facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. Martha Coakley.
Oh my God, I know what she did. She said something to somebody. Ugh. I read this story yesterday. This is going to kill me. Because anytime I see a story with Coakley, I just cringe. I mean, I love her. She comes into my restaurant. Oh my God, I can't think of it. And when you say it, it's going to aggravate me.
She is actually lurking in the background in one of the biggest stories going on in the financial district downtown Boston right now, which is the battle for control of Suffolk University. Martha Coakley has been chosen by the board of directors to replace current Suffolk University president Margaret McKenna. And Margaret McKenna is not going down without a fight. And a number of faculty members and students have rallied to her cause.
She never goes away.
And it's interesting because McKenna doesn't seem to have done anything wrong. And it looks like somebody was just like, well, Martha needs a job. Give her Suffolk. And normally in Massachusetts, former politicians get whatever university job they want without any problems whatsoever. Not this time.
All right. So it's 1-1. You have a chance to tie it up. Astrid and James.
Astrid and James. Astrid Gilberto immediately comes to mind whenever I hear that name. Astrid and James. Children's names. But off the top of my head,
you're almost there. Nameberry, the big naming, you know, group that comes out every year. So last year was Sophia and Jackson.
Oh.